Before we get to today's podcast, I want to remind you about another great ESPN podcast, the Woj Pod. Every week, Woj chats with the newsmakers in and around the NBA, players, coaches, executives, and more. Download and subscribe to the Woj Pod and the right time wherever you get your podcasts. 2020 is going to be the year you get it together, right? Join that gym, start that diet. Nah, you're not going to do that. But how about getting out of that job and into a career in information technology? There are millions of unified cybersecurity positions in the U.S. right now, and My Computer Career is training people to help fill them. No IT experience or education? No problem. It's not rocket science. It's mycomputercareer.edu. Go to mycomputercareer.edu and take the free career evaluation today. You can start your new life as an information technology professional in months, not years. Attend classes on campus or live online just a few times a week to get what you'll need to start your new career. More than just a school, My Computer Career helps you get into the industry by working with hundreds of employers that hire our students. My Computer Career is nationally accredited and financial aid is available for those who qualify, including the GI Bill. Classes start soon, so make new year, new career your resolution and take the free career evaluation today at mycomputercareer.edu. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening. Wherever you get your podcast, rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are, in fact, a hater. It's that time of week where we do an interview. Had a national championship game in college football a couple days ago, so we are on now with the best college football writer in America. Check him out at BannerSociety.com. His name is Spencer Hall, and, well, we lived long enough to see it. Ed Ogeron, national champion, and, like, American darling.
American darling, just basically a little over 10 years removed from being a laughingstock at Ole Miss and the Cajun Cookie Monster, now a legend and a title holder in his own right. I am most overjoyed by his celebration of this, which was to eat a ham sandwich.
Yeah, because I think one thing people don't realize about Ogeron is that he has been sober for 20 years. So, like, this version of Ed Ogeron is actually the quite toned down version of Ed Ogeron. By the way, that also means the sober version of Ed Ogeron is the one who allegedly challenged his whole team to fight in his first meeting with them at Ole Miss. Mm-hmm. Remember that?
Yeah, yeah. I want you to think about every Ed Ogeron story you've ever heard. And I want you to remember that if you heard one from the last 20, 25 years, then you're hearing one from a man who has been stone cold sober for over 2 decades. I believe that includes the time that he went out and was working out on the field before practice at 4:30 a.m. and was asked in an article by David Hale on ESPN.com, was asked by another assistant coach, "Hey, man, you're in great shape. Why are you out here at 4:30? And Ed Ogeron looked at him and said, "The day I can't whip a man's ass is the day I stay in bed."
There it was, right there. Who says that? The answer? Ed Ogeron. I am stunned by this, though. And I also, like, the USC people that are like, "That could have been our coach." No, 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 no. He could have been your coach, but that couldn't have been your coach. It doesn't go way if he's at USC. In large part because USC don't spend money like this, right? Like, the Dabo Ed Ogeron model of CEO hinges heavily on spending all the money in the world on everything else.
Oh, very much so. In fact, consider this, that not only did you see 3 highlight videos from LSU's well-moneyed, well-put-together video department, you also got a football team that managed to go out and hire 2 offensive coordinators. Mind you, that same offense, many people blame for LSU lingering in the Stone Age for years, that offensive coordinator still sitting right next to the new guy, by the way. It's a neat trick. You didn't get rid of the manager. You just hired another manager. You hired Joe Brady. And in addition to that, they managed to actually hire some analytics guys, right? Weird. They hired 5 or 6 analytics guys, and suddenly they end up being a lot better. Yeah, LSU spent this money, but let's also consider context here. USC fans, I don't want you to mourn this too much because you're not getting the same experience, and you're not getting the same Ogeron, and you're not getting the same ride if this is at USC. Because going back to something bigger here, this particular confluence of players, talent, context, events, this is so singular, and it happened so fast. I want you to remember Dave Aranda, their defensive coordinator. Dave Aranda redid the whole defense in, like, August.
Yeah, that explains a lot, by the way, right? Because their defense took a while to get it going in a way that was bizarre to be LSU. And then by the end of the year, it's like, oh, so you guys are doing defense too. Okay, well, cancel Christmas.
People go, oh, man, football is such a structured, organized thing. This is the team that, for me, most embodied things just coming together. It's not that it was an accident. Oh, far from it. Very designed, very intentional, and a long time coming in a lot of different ways. But for everything to hit at once and for them to all hit peak performance, not at the end of the season, the regular season, I mean, they hit peak performance in the last game, right? In their last two games against Oklahoma and against Clemson. Yeah, this ain't happening again. And USC, you wouldn't have gotten this. You wouldn't have gotten Ed Ogeron bringing 20 pounds of crawfish like into a meeting and deciding, okay, well, we're eating. That's not happening in LA. It's just not.
I tell you this, though, what might happen if he stayed there, craziest thing going on, and I understand that people don't care this much about the granular stuff of college football, but all the good players in California leaving California.
Yeah, no, this is my argument. I disagree with some of my coworkers like Jason Kirk here says, oh, we need USC to be good so we can care about Pac-12 football. That's true. But if USC's not good, that talent doesn't even stay in the Pac-12. Oregon gets some of it. But if you look at the top 10 recruits who are coming out of California, they're going all over the place. There's like an Oklahoma, there's like a Georgia, Texas. You know, they leave. They will leave that state rather than play for second-ranked Pac-12 powers. It's not like the best recruits in LA say, well, I'll just go to UCLA. No, 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 no. That is a very different thing. You've made a very different choice in life. Okay? That's like saying, oh, I'll just get another beverage if they don't have Dr. Pepper. Texans, you hear me. There is no second beverage, right? Maybe a Big Red? That's not, no, it's not like that. You're just going to get water. You're going to go do something else.
And you have to get in, right? Because that's the thing about, the thing about the four Pac-12 schools in California, two of them you got to get into. And one of them doesn't want to spend any money on anything. And then the other is USC.
Yeah. Did we hear anything about David Shaw being hired as an NFL coach this cycle around?
No, what the hell is going on up there, by the way? Do you have an answer?
No, I don't. It's so small and it's such an insular little community. And suddenly you've got people transferring out. You've got the performance on the field falling off. You've got their recruiting tailing off. And you have the one thing that's been consistent and sustained from Samford, besides good offensive line play, which is rumors of David Shaw being favored as an NFL coach, you know, which I don't know. He runs an offense that likes to run the ball and go under center. So maybe, and he doesn't really say that much. So, you know, a non-embarrassing safe NFL pick, I guess, is his profile. But yeah, you haven't heard that. And Stanford in several different ways has fallen off badly. They lost their strength coach, which anybody will tell you that losing a strength coach is losing a big part of the program.
Especially at a school like that, where you got to make your players. Mm-hmm.
They don't come fully formed, right? You don't just roll them out there as freshmen. You got to go ahead and develop them, train them, get them bigger, stronger, faster, more flexible. And that's something that is a huge loss for a program. So I don't know what the deal is with Stanford. I know the talent won't go there unless it can get in, and I know that talent won't just go there because it's on the West Coast, which is when you go like, okay, what are the Pac-12 problems? You go, well, some of them are structural. A lot of them are problems by choice that they've made for themselves.
Yeah, but with LSU and Ogeron and all this, and Joe Burrow, who really played himself into the Cam Newton zone, which I did not think was possible. I still think Cam's 2010 is the best individual season just because he wasn't playing with any talent and LSU was loaded all the way around. But I can't think of anybody I've seen make a jump like Joe Burrow did, because with Cam, we didn't see him play. I've seen Joe Burrow play before. This wasn't it.
No, we've both seen Joe Burrow play, you know, mediocrely, right? We've both seen Joe Burrow play at a level which was nothing close to this. I don't mean just like a couple of, well, you know, he practiced and got better. No, looks like a different dude rolled out there, right? Looks like a completely different human being took the field with the same jersey on, right? I don't know. You know, you say you think Cam had a better season. My comparison was this, that Cam was more of the single-handedly, I will blow everything up in a game if I have to, right? Running the ball, passing the ball, whatever. I don't think I've seen any, but, you know, it's not like Cam was distributing the ball a lot. It's not like you wanted to distribute the ball on that,
right.
that Auburn team either, right? Like, I don't know if you want, God rest his soul, Phil Lutzenkirchen catching 15 balls, right? That's not going to do that much for your offense. At the same time, I don't think Cam had that shot, right? I don't think he had the chance that Joe Burrow had. So it's a little unfair to, you know, compare both of them, or to say that, you know, I think especially that Joe Burrow had a better single season than Cam. I think Joe Burrow had a lot more tools around him. However, in that role, given what he had and given the privilege that he had to throw to a Ja'Marr Chase. By the way, did you notice in that game, if anything went wrong and if they got behind schedule, football's easy. Just throw it to Ja'Marr Chase. That's what they did. Like, this is not hard. Every time they began to develop something down the field and they take a loss or they get behind schedule, what do? I think I'm going to throw the ball to Ja'Marr Chase because that was the dude who was working. This is something LSU did, by the way, at every opportunity this season, which was one's not working. Well, I guess we'll just go to two a bunch of times. That's it. You know, they did that with Jefferson. They did that with Marshall. They did that with Moss at times. They did that with Clyde Edwards-Helaire in the Alabama game. Every time anything went wrong, they went back to him because nobody in the interior of Alabama's defense could handle him, either catching the ball or running the ball. They did what worked. They said, you know, in that first quarter, there was a lot of, I don't know, can we get the ball to this guy? No? Okay. Ja'Marr's open. That's a nice option to have. But with all that, I don't think I've ever seen anybody in college football, period, serve as a better catalyst and conductor of an offense. Things just, what do you defend? Right. When Joe Burrow was there, he found out what was weak, and all of a sudden, everything's on fire. You can't tackle everything that they're throwing at you. And the guy who was responsible for that more than anybody was Joe Burrow.
Yeah, no, he did everything. I guess the way that I look at it is, I watched what happened at Alabama when Tua went out and they brought in Mac Jones. And while Mac Jones was certainly not Tua, I think people underestimated the numbers that offense still put up with their, like, low, you know, high tier three, low tier four star guy. Like, he still came out there and did it. And I wonder what it would be if we had a quarterback other than Joe Burrow and dropped it in there. I know what would have happened at Auburn if that wasn't Cam Newton. And the answer, 6-6. If you're lucky.
Oh, yeah. Like, I think the thing that nobody will disagree with on this point is this. The highest value of a replacement player
yes.
is Cam Newton, single-handedly, right? I think that if you are going for an overall better season in terms of production, it's real hard to argue yeah. it wasn't Burrow.
60-6.
It's not sane. It's just not sane, man. It's not. Like, everybody listening to this right now is probably thinking, oh, yeah, I realize he had a good season. No, you don't. It's going to take you a couple of years to go back and look and go, good Lord, this man did this in the SEC.
Yeah, it was like playing Madden on Pro.
Oh, yeah, playing Madden on Pro, playing the old NCAA on Heisman, and hitting 70% completion marks on passes, which, by the way, were not at the line of scrimmage. Typically, you see that, and you go, oh, that's Tim Couch with Kentucky, right? That's some air raid guy throwing 1,000 bubble screens. Nope. Burrow on deep balls. Burrow on first down where they would throw for it. By the way, LSU, you remember football is simple? We're going to go back to football is simple. LSU passed the ball for 7 yards on first down a lot. It's wild. They passed the ball like 65-35, I wanted to say. And when they ran it with Clyde Edwards-Helaire. That's a nice luxury to have when you go, hey, it's 2nd and 3 every time we get the ball.
I do feel like it could have been like this for a long time, though, because I've said this a lot, and I don't think people really understand this point. Their problem at quarterback post Jamarcus Russell was not that they weren't recruiting good quarterback prospects. They were. They were getting guys that other people wanted. Mm-hmm. They just didn't do anything with them once they got there, and that's with the head coach who fancied himself as an offensive guy.
Yeah, and also, let's just give credit to Ed Ogeron for finally doing the obvious thing, which was going, about an hour and a half down the road in traffic to New Orleans and going, you know what? You guys have been scoring a ton of points in the NFL where that's hard to do. Why don't we ask you what's up? The reason they did that, by the way, if you want to just chain all this together, they were going to face Joe Moorhead. That was the thing. They were going to face Joe Moorhead running a bunch of RPOs, and Ed Ogeron got in the room with Joe Brady and with his existing offensive coordinator, Steve Ensminger, and they listened to this guy talk, and they're like, oh, you know what? You seem real smart. Why don't you come coach with us? That's the kind of, like, leap that Ed Ogeron deserves all the credit in the world for taking here. That they didn't do it sooner, either under Ogeron or Miles, is insane, because I want you to go back to, like, 2003. Was there a single player on offense who wasn't a running back? Like, they're all running backs. They're all...
Yeah, because Josh Reed was gone by then, right?
Uh-huh. Yeah, like, if you want to just go in, like, every single one of those players was just a fast twitch genius who, if you got the ball in space to them, would have done some damage. And Les Miles slept on that for years, trying to run the same thing over and over and over again. His old athletic director, Joe Oliva, last week was like, yeah, I was like talking to a brick wall. Wasn't going to do anything different. And the minute they decide to change, look at that. Most dynamic offense in the history of college football.
And let me tell you something. Joe Oliva's got a better idea about football than you do. It's time to hang up that whistle.
Yeah.
I'm here to tell you that. It is time to hang up that whistle once that man makes that. Wow. Yeah. No. But I watched all of this, and the big thing with I look at Ogeron, I'm now totally on the, if I'm hiring a head coach, I don't want a coordinator. I don't want that. Give me your recruiting coordinator / position coach. Give me that guy, because that guy knows he ain't coordinating no damn whatever. And then he'll get people who can.
Yeah, just get somebody, especially, like, I think more than anything, if you look at the guys in this game who are coaching, you have Dabo Swinney and you have Ed Ogeron, who are two people. If I asked you, would they be successful somewhere else? The answer is yes. Would they be this successful? No. One particular part of this is that, you know, both guys want to be there, and both guys are very, very well suited to their particular niche here. That's Ed Ogeron is a Louisiana native, understands the entire state. He's going to get that on lockdown, but he's also a CEO. Dabo Swinney at Clemson, you know, when people say, well, you know, he's going to get hired away or Alabama might call for him, he's not valuable. There's no place he is more valuable than he is at Clemson. There is no place where Ed Ogeron is more valuable than he is currently as head coach at LSU. And I think that's an important distinction and why those guys stay and will stay, because you're not going to make the leap from a place where I'm worth $8 million a year to a place where I might get paid $8 million. But in reality, I'm probably, you know, like as replaceable as anyone else and at like $5 or $6
million. Dabo would dive a coronary if you coach at Alabama. And the reason is he listened too much. You can't do that job and listen as much as he does.
No. How are you going to like sell the disrespect card? Which was Dabo's whole thing, right? Like, we're being disrespected, defending national title.
Yes.
Champions, right? Holders. Like, they, yeah, you're being disrespected because we're ranking you first?
Okay. I actually agree with him.
That was true. Then again, look what happened in the title game.
That's true. Like, no, that is true also. Mm-hmm. But I do think this. Yeah. They won 29 straight games, and we didn't treat it like we did when Miami won 29 straight games or when USC did that. Like, I understand. We do still kind of look at them like, oh, Clemson is cute, but that's because of the presence of Alabama. Like, there's only room for one of those at a time, and Alabama gets the space.
That's true. And additionally, too, I just think that, you know, people still have a hard time with Clemson because, one, haven't been on top as long. And two, I think that people really don't know where they are. Like, he's asking American to point out Clemson. I'd be like, that's somewhere.
I wonder
South
how
Carolina?
Many people know what city Clemson is in.
Yeah, it's a trick question, ain't it?
Right. Like, I really wonder. Like, the answer is dead in your face, but I don't know how many people actually know. Like, if I were to go outside for today's show and ask Pablo, hey, man, where is Clemson? I'm not positive that he would know, because to be honest, I'm not positive I knew until I moved to North Carolina.
Yeah, no, and you know, could you find it on a map? That's even harder. I think if you went and asked Pablo, you'd put Harvard on his heels real fast, because it's, you know, Clemson is just not as established a you know, like Alabama culturally. Like, there are songs that mention Alabama football casually that are not written by sports fans. That's, you know, Deacon Blues mentions Alabama by name, right? For real unflattering reasons, but still, like, it's a much larger brand and there's much more recognition. And at the same time, I feel like, you know, playing in the SEC is a slightly different deal than playing in the ACC, both historically and in the moment, right? You're just going to get more pub, you know, the SEC network came first for a reason, right? There was more money to make and there were more eyeballs and there was a more established brand there. That's not insulting the ACC at all. If anybody wants me to insult the ACC, I got a real good case for doing that, but that's not what I'm doing right here. What I'm saying is Clemson won't get that same kind of respect, and Dabo's right in that respect, just because of where they are and who they are, not what they're doing or how they're playing, which was brilliant in winning 29 straight.
What is the most famous moment in Clemson football history? Because I know I got my vote, and guess what? It ain't really about Clemson.
No, I think if you asked any football fan older than 30, would that be the fumble Ruski? Or would that be against Florida State? Or if you're a little older, would it be giving up 70 to West Virginia in the Orange Bowl?
I was actually going for number three, which is Woody Hayes punching one of your players.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, punching Charlie Bauman.
Can you imagine what was going through his mind at that moment?
I mean, rage.
Because he punched him for real. Like, it wasn't just to say I did it. Woody Hayes tried to take him out.
Oh yeah, Woody Hayes did. And this is coming, by the way. Like, he destroyed a first down marker in the middle of the game, I believe, the season before or a couple of seasons before. So like toward the end, it was whatever Ohio State's pressure was at the moment. It was getting to him. But Clemson is, yeah, most famous for dethroning a guy who otherwise, you know, probably would have been one of the few coaches at Ohio State to retire on his own terms.
Yes, still hasn't happened.
it's like that and Auburn, man.
Yo.
Two places where the end, you can hang on for a while, but the end's going to be weird.
Look, Earl Bruce was there for like 10 years. He had a really good year that first year. I think they finished like number two. Then after that, it was three losses a year, basically for a whole decade. John Cooper went 2-10-1, I think it was, against Michigan in his time there. Jim Tressel won a national championship. Urban Meyer won a national championship. They all left the same way.
No, they're kind of like some sort of doomed kingdom, right? Like, that's every time somebody gets that crown, they'll be up there for a while. They're going to win a few. And then the end is going to start to get bizarre on you. So just expect that, right? I think if you're an Ohio State coach, you've been there 8 years, resign.
Yeah.
Just resign. If you've won one or two and you go, oh, man, this is real nice, I think I'm going to take a couple of years off, boys, because you know what's coming down the road? Nothing good.
I tell you another reason, though, I think that Clemson doesn't get that respect that Dabo wants. And it's interesting because Clemson is low-key the new Miami, right? Like, mm-hmm. like that's I think that's the last time you can make the argument for Florida also. But I feel like this like, Miami probably fits a little better. The last time that you just had a power build in the way that this power built in a place where you're really not supposed to do that, because it's more logical that Florida could build what Florida built in the 90s than it is that Miami, you know, a couple, you know, the talent, the local talent thing comes up, but it was still like more of a shocking sort of thing that this place would be the one that could find a way to get it done. What's wild about Clemson to me, though, Miami, we always knew the names of those guys. It's kind of crazy that we don't really know Clemson dudes' names like that.
That's wild. The other wild thing is this, that they've managed to do that with five stars.
Yes.
That's, if you look at recruiting, it's not like they're a bunch of no names. It's that they're managed and handled in a way where the team brand is the thing that comes first, and the kind of five stars that they recruit, which, by the way, they do selectively. It's not just like they're picking 4- and 5-star recruits because they're on the list. It's because they're picking the ones that they want and leaving the rest. Think about the recruiting prowess there. Think about the kind of luxury, that level that Clemson's operating at, where they go, no, we just want these guys. That's it. We could have more. Do you like that left tackle? We don't like him as much. Oh, he's a 5-star. This is basically, Clemson gets to do this right now, okay? The only other team that comes close is maybe Alabama. They walk into the showroom and they're like, Maserati, that's quaint. We'll take two more Ferraris, please. They just pass it over. So now they're like a bunch of supercars all lined up, and they just go, yeah, we'll take that $600,000 one and not that $600,000 one.
And yo, no disrespect, their facility's got to be the best thing in the world, right? Because I ain't going there.
That's the other thing. You talk about Miami and Florida being powers. Florida to a lesser extent, because I'm just going to put it this way. Main Street in Gainesville, not exactly South Beach, not exactly even Coral Gables. And I went there for 4 years. But I will say this. It's South Beach compared to downtown Clemson. And there's nothing. There's nothing there. There's Clemson University, lovely community, beautiful little burg up in upstate South Carolina. But you're not going there because you like the cosmopolitan atmosphere of a bustling major city. That ain't the deal. This isn't USC in the 2000s, where part of the sell was, hey, you know, you're a top prospect from Virginia. Do you want to play in horrible humidity in the ACC, or would you like to come out to L.A., where you're basically a movie star?
And you ain't never seen nothing like that before when you get off the plane.
Nothing. You've never felt it. You get off the plane and you're like, it's 70 degrees and I don't want to die. It's amazing. Everything's super pleasant. And then all of a sudden, oh, you also get to play for USC. We're the NFL team in town. And always have been and always will be. This is not what Clemson gets to pitch. What they get to pitch is, why don't you come play for Clemson and compete for national titles and get drafted in the NFL? Because, by the way, we can put, if you're a defensive lineman, we could put four of you in the draft at once.
Yeah.
Easy.
Three in the first round.
Mm-hmm. three in the first round. Oh, and after you won a national title and you beat up on who? Oh, yeah, that's right. The existing belt holder, Alabama. So you beat The Undertaker and then you get a first round pick. How's that for a recruiting pitch? It's pretty good. Explains a lot.
I like everything about Clemson except the coach. I told you that the other day. And I used to kind of like him.
There's a lot to like about, like, I love the way they play offense. They're aggressive. They put people in a space to succeed. They trust individual players, and they play them as freshmen. Like, remember Justin Ross against Alabama? He's ruining that secondary as a kid who was playing high school the year before. This is one thing they won't get enough credit for. They came out in a 3-1-7 against that LSU offense. Bonkers. Joe Burrow had no idea what he was looking at for the first quarter. None. And then it didn't matter because he figured out, just get the ball to Ja'Marr Chase. No defense can solve this. But they dared them to run, and LSU did not run on them. LSU decided, nope, doubling down, just sticking to this whole passing thing that's been working well. And 600 yards and 40-plus points later, there we are. What they do defensively is awesome. Brett Venables did a great job. I just don't think there is – Tony Romo made the best comment I have heard in football commentary in years when Jim Nance asked him what the Texans should do about the Chiefs' offense, which was ripping them up at this point in the game. And Jim Nance says, well, what do you do with this? And Romo said, well, Jim, if they had answers, they would have used them by now. And that's it was the best encapsulation of I've got great answers. It's just that the problems are way bigger than those answers, right? Like sometimes you see a team do that and you think a coach could just say, well, move this guy here. Guess what? That guy doesn't matter when the other guy's Ja'Marr Chase. It just doesn't.
Dude, that game was, Kansas City has scored the second touchdown. It was like, oh, okay.
Done.
I know what's going to happen now.
It was done. Man, it was done when it was done on that 4th and 1. It was done. Over. Next, like, Chiefs rolled out and they're like, this next play is going for 60. They knew it. They knew it. Same thing with LSU. This is the kind of thing you can do when you are playing at full capacity of talent and execution. When they came out and they scored, and all of it, Clemson, by the way, doesn't just come back like, you know, they go down, then they come back up at 17-7 at one point. And at 17-7, LSU special teams are out there like fanning the ball and dancing because they know that offense is coming. They know. And by the way, defensively, LSU made Clemson punt 9
That's
times.
Bananas. Trevor Lawrence is like, I've never had to do anything this hard before in my life on a football field.
Nope.
Like, I imagine he played varsity as a freshman in high school, and he still ain't never had to do anything as difficult as that.
No, and by the way, they got after Etienne. Etienne is like an astonishing running back, a brilliant talent, just a player who in 5 yards can go from sitting still to 20 miles an hour. Nuts. The acceleration on the Travis Etienne model is just otherworldly. And they had 4 dudes on him the whole time. My favorite sequence in the whole game, I believe it's in the end of the first quarter, he dodges 3 tacklers. 3. And then turns, and there's a defensive tackle who falls on him. It's just not fair, right? Like, you did everything you're supposed to do. I made 3 elite defenders miss me, and the 4th is a 300-pound man who fell on me.
All right, we'll be back with more with Spencer Hall. But first, it's a new year. Perfect opportunity to take your business to the next level by hiring the right people. But finding qualified candidates can be challenging. ZipRecruiter.com/Bomani makes it easy. ZipRecruiter sends your job to over 100 of the web's leading job boards, but they don't stop there. With their powerful matching technology, ZipRecruiter scans thousands of resumes to find people with the right experience and invite them to apply to your job. As applications come in, ZipRecruiter analyzes each one and spotlights the top candidates so you never miss a great match. ZipRecruiter is so effective that 4 out of 5 of employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site within the first day. And right now, my listeners can try ZipRecruiter for free at this exclusive web address, ZipRecruiter.com/Bomani. That's ZipRecruiter.com/BOMANI. ZipRecruiter.com/Bomani. ZipRecruiter, smartest way to hire. There's a good chance Odell Beckham gave him some bread. Yo, what was he doing?
Odell was having a wonderful time.
Yeah!
I don't know why everybody... I don't know why everybody's getting on somebody who's clearly just celebrating and having a marvelous time and wanting to share the wealth a little bit.
Yeah.
Also, if you're upset about college athletes receiving a couple hundred bucks from one of their mentors on the field in front of everybody, go look at the payrolls. You can't just going, oh man, how dare they receive money? What? Dabo got like $600,000 in bonuses so it can build a second La Quinta in Clemson. House kind of looks like a La Quinta, man. It really does.
Oh God,
it
I was hoping like that he owned a La Quinta. Oh, that would have been so great.
He does basically. His house is kind of castle looking. It kind of looks like a Steak and Ale meets a La Quinta. If you remember Steak and
Yo,
Ale.
Yo, Steak and Ale still in the league?
There's a Steak and Ale in downtown Atlanta, but I don't know if that means they're still in the league. That might be a rogue Steak and Ale for all I know.
Yo, I had forgotten about the Steak and Ale in Atlanta. I had forgotten about Steak and Ale. Wow. This is a thing. Like, you know, of course, I obviously don't care about these dudes getting a little bread. Although I would have looked at Odell and been like, bruh, I ain't even got no pockets. like what am I supposed to do with this money?
Where am I gonna keep all this? By the way, also, they were smoking cigars in the locker room afterwards.
Yes.
And did you follow this entire saga?
Yeah, with the cop who actually told him to stop.
Shouts out to the cop who walks in and has such faith in the august power of the law that he thinks his mere presence can compel a recently victorious football team on an all-time testosterone high, like 50 dudes who all outweigh you. And who just finished 4 hours of punching and getting punched in the face. You walk in and you're like, put those cigars out. Yeah. Yeah. Good luck, man. Good luck. I understand, by the way, from one report that Odell Beckham had some words for that policeman because he, like me, understood the math better than the cop. Do you know what they then did with those cigars? They put them out and threw them in a plastic trash can. So good. Great solution, guys. Awesome management on their part there.
True story. That cop would have had a better chance if he had roughed Odell Beckham up in the locker room than he would have trying to stop these guys from smoking.
Oh, that would have gone way better than trying to tell these guys to stop smoking. Than trying to stop Joe Burrow?
Of all people.
Joe Burrow was effectively just had extra legal powers that night. That was the governor of Louisiana. If Joe Burrow had decided that there was no school the next day, there wouldn't have been school the next day. He could have just done that, right? You're going to try to keep him from smoking a cigar? Good luck.
Well, also, speaking of the governor of Louisiana, you know who his buddy is? Ed Ogeron.
Ed Ogeron.
Right. Like, I imagine that he was there when that happened because there's some real weird politics stuff that's going on around this. Like, Trump used this as a way to get himself to FaceTime with his people, but the Democratic governor of Louisiana has also been doing the exact same thing with Ed Ogeron. Like, there's a lot that's going on there. And I say all that to say, you're going to tell the governor to quit smoking because that's basically what you was trying to do.
That's what you're trying to do. Also, the John Bell Edwards thing and being bros with Ogeron is a neat way to go ahead and highlight this, that the three highlight videos and the entire season full of, you know, myth building surrounding this LSU team, it's essentially one long Ed Ogeron greatest hits mixtape. That's all this is, because remember, they got The Rock to do their final highlight video.
That's Miami guy.
Uh-huh. That wasn't out. They're like, how much did they pay him? Ed Ogeron didn't have to, because he can call The Rock and get a favor. You know why? Because he coached Dwayne The Rock Johnson at Miami when he lost his job to Warren Sapp.
Yep.
That's how far back and how deep Ed goes there, right? If Ed Ogeron wants something in that particular environment, he calls them and he gets it done, right? Does he need a favor? He can call the governor. I'm going back to this point. There are coaches, and then there are coaches who fit in a niche so well that they kind of transcend that. And Ed is real close to that right now in a way that, by the way, Nick Saban at Alabama is not.
No.
I'm going to say this. Nick Saban's replaceable. Yeah. All right? Dabo and Ed, they're not.
That's a great point.
Because they're not. Ed, you know what? Nick is part of a machine. And if that machine needs a new part, guess what? They can replace that part. It might take a couple of suppliers. It might take a couple of tries, but they can replace that part and win a national title, right? Ed and Dabo, with the way they built this up, they're able to go back to their bosses and say, you know what? This happened because of me and because of who I am, not what I am, which is a good football coach, right? Like Nick Saban could go, I am the greatest football coach of our time. And they go, yeah, that's, you know, that's undoubtedly true. Can I go ahead and go back to this point? Are you the greatest coach at this place, though?
Right.
Right? At this moment. And that's the part, that's where Ed wins. That's where Ogeron, and that's where Dabo Swinney, and I'm trying to think of anyone else who has that particular fit at the moment. That's where Bobby Bowden in Florida State won, right? Like, yeah. Y'all, I am the organ,
right?
I'm the thing that makes this work.
Where Miami was, no, we have a machine, and honestly, we don't care if this whole thing falls apart. We don't like these guys. Part of what I think is also fascinating with the idea of Saban is they had once believed Bear Bryant to be this larger-than-life legend and also believed that every coach they have after should be able to do the exact same thing. It doesn't make any sense, but that's what has powered their whole thing for decades.
Yeah. This is the thing. Dan Mullen said that it's way easier to go from 4-8 to 10 wins than it is to go from 10 to 11. And that's because the pressure at the top and the competition is so very, very intense. And that's where Alabama's at because they're usually cruising at 10. Right? You want to know why they're crazy? They're trying to get to 11 wins. They're trying to get to 12. And that distance, that last little gap in getting those two games against top competition, those are the hardest steps to take. Those are the hardest holds to reach. That is the last margin and the most difficult part to do. So when Alabama says, you know, hey, we should do this every single time, it's because, you know, given the commitment that they have organizationally, 9 or 10 wins, that's going to be nice. It's going to be fine. They'll tell you that, right? When somebody tells you something's fine, Alabama will be like, yeah, you know, 9 wins is fine.
Yeah.
They don't mean it.
Yeah, Alabama's like, what do you think I grind for, to drive a RAV4? No! Right? I don't do all this working to be driving your regular old four-door sedan. No! We are just done.
You know, this is cute. I'm happy with a steak, if you call this a steak. It's not what I would call a steak now, is it?
Now, let me ask you this. Are you familiar with a gentleman named Edwin Edwards?
Oh, yes. I believe four-time governor of Louisiana.
Yes, the only thing that would make this LSU thing better is if Edwin Edwards was the governor. Can you imagine how Edwin Edwards would be skinning and grinning with Ed Ogeron? And for those of you who don't know, yes, it's not simply that Edwin Edwards was the governor like four times or something like that. It's that he is the most everybody knows he's running game politician ever that people love. If Edwin Edwards ran tomorrow, I can tell you a whole bunch of people, and a lot of them are black, that would be in the street right then to go vote for Edwin Edwards. Edwin Edwards also, by the way, is the originator of the all-time quote about politics, the only way I could lose is if they caught me with a dead girl or a live boy. That's his quote. He'd have been right along it.
Do you want to know how much game Edwin Edwards has? This is how much. He authorized the entry of police into the campus at Southern University, all right, in the 60s during student protests. That was Edwin Edwards, gave it the green light. It's totally fine. You know whose face is like front and center at the Southern University School of Law? Big old portrait. Everybody loves him. Big glowing paragraph written about him and his support for Southern University. That's right, Edwin Edwards. That's how much game Edwin Edwards has.
Look, my dad, you have to remember, was ejected from Southern University for protesting in the 1960s. And I don't recall him saying a bad thing about Edwin Edwards.
Nope.
just like Edwin. And by the way, my dad is from a little town called Oakdale, Louisiana, and Edwin lived in Oakdale during the first decade of this millennium. Ask me why.
Why?
That's where the pen is. he was in the Oakdale Correctional Facility while he was doing that time. Why was Edwin Edwards doing that time, you ask? Because Edwin Edwards shook down Eddie DeBartolo, owner of the 49ers, behind a casino simply because he had felt that Eddie DeBartolo, that's Eddie DeBartolo Jr., had not shown him proper deference. So he demanded a payment. Not because he wanted the money, not because he needed the money, but because he was Edwin Edwards.
Also, by the way, he did all this, I believe, in his 70s. I think in the last 15 years since Edwin Edwards turned 70 or plus, he's been to jail.
Yes.
Like big bad jail, serious jail. And also, I believe, got married and had a kid again.
Oh, yeah. No. He's got a kid much younger than me.
Yeah. Let me go ahead and posit this. That's too much. That's too much, Edwin. It's too much even for you, man. You know what should happen after you turn like 80? Nothing. Should be nothing. Your list of your next accomplishment should be death. That's it.
We need him with Ed Ogeron. That is what we need. That's all I'm saying. We need him with Ed Ogeron. Because this whole Ed Ogeron thing is so Louisiana. And did you read Ross Dellinger's thing in Sports Illustrated, the long thing he did on Ogeron?
Yeah.
What I thought was interesting, you know, he went to Cajun country, and I think that's good because a lot of people don't know much about the life that they're living down there. And Ed Ogeron is theirs, man. He is 100% theirs. They love that dude to death. But I did think it was funny. One of them Cajun cats had a quote, was like, why are we allowed to make fun of the way that he speaks? And the guy said, I'm going to get the order wrong, but he said, you can't do that with Mexicans, Africans, Asians. And I'm like, first of all, they do. The Asians would definitely disagree with you about that, about whether people are allowed to make fun of how they talk. And number two, we are not making fun of Ed Ogeron's accent. It's the gravel.
Like, we're making fun of the fact he sounds like a talking rock tumbler.
Yeah, and, yeah. It hits you immediately. Like, his vocals slap the tape so hard from the first bar. It's like, oh, man, oh, that's right, it's Ed. Got it.
People who have not been in the same room with him or done a press conference or anything, they don't realize that once you hear it, you won't stop doing it.
Yeah.
It's not like you go, oh, well, I've been making fun of his accent. No, you make fun of the fact that Ed speaks at a volume and at a tenor that you can hear from the next room, and you know it's Ed. It's like a car pulling up in your driveway.
And now he's legend.
Yeah, no, he's a legend before. Now he's something else, man. He's like for the next 6 months until they play again, he gets to be Louisiana demigod. And now we have to look at a happy 9-3 next year.
Yo.
Because guess what happened the minute everyone won? Boom!
Deuces were thrown.
Yeah, later.
Yo, because let's not forget this about LSU. Because the Alabama-LSU game has been so big every year in SEC, and honestly, people talk more about this stuff than they watch it in, like, on the national sense, like, not people who are just really, like, into the nuts and bolts like me and you about it. Most people are just coming in. Yo, man, this has basically been a 3 or 4, sometimes 5, loss program for about 11 years coming into this one. They lost 4 games last year, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, and lost them against people who this year they just turned around and beat by double scores. Remember, Florida played them close,
yeah.
And then in a quarter they just uncorked, 14-point gap because they could do that. And when they changed everything up, by the way, that 2023 win over Auburn, which surely would have been a case of where Auburn does that thing of where they do absolutely nothing but obstruct you the whole game and then miraculously pull 2 or 3 plays from their hindquarters to win. Guess what? That ended up being a comfortable win where Joe Burrow, I don't know, I think he only threw for 330 yards in that game and one TD. That's about what you were limiting him to. That's when I knew that everybody in the playoff is in trouble because you go, well, what did Auburn do to them when they were trying to Auburn their hardest? And you go, oh, he still had 300 plus in a TD. Didn't make any big mistakes. Like, yeah, y'all are dead. Everyone who faces them are dead already.
Hey, looking back on it, the least impressive thing of the LSU season is the fact they gave up 20 points to Arkansas. Keep it in mind, they gave up 20 points to Arkansas the week after Arkansas scored 19 against Western Kentucky.
That's when you go, man, what's our improvement metric this season for LSU's defense? You go, well, we went from being 1 point worse than Western Kentucky's defense to making Clemson punt 9 times. Dave Aranda, good job, man. Good job.
Yeah. Do you think Dave Aranda gets a little salty here and all this Joe Brady talk? Do you think he gets a little salty? Now, granted, he's the highest paid assistant coach in America, right? But do you think he's kind of like, how come anybody talking about hiring me?
No, this is that Alonzo Mourning gif, right? Where, you know, shaking your head on the bench like, nobody's talking about me. Then you check your bank account and you go, well, you know, there's that. There's that, y'all.
Yeah, got a point. Got a point. And thank you, by the way, in helping me that day when I was trying to find out if Dave Aranda was black.
You're welcome. I did my best to provide you with documented sources.
It was
no hearsay from me.
Dude, it was so tough. Nobody really knew. Nobody had a great answer. Nobody did. Right? I was just like, huh, good question. Right? And you know what that tells me? The underrepresentation of our Latino brothers in college football. Because basically, if I see you and you're Latin and you're like a coach, but I don't know anything about you but that, my guess is going to be black or Polynesian. I learned that in this quest.
There's also this, that if you're looking at that lack of representation, you should follow, for example, our own Alex Kirshner this morning, who said that if you're looking at a coach and he's a retread, like Bobby Petrino, who's, just a guy who, I don't know, you could go look up his resume. It's fascinating. you might have a giggle or two. You should go look up what he's done. If you're thinking about hiring one of those guys, there's an easy solution that not only helps diversity, but also sort of increases the overall quality of the game in terms of new ideas and representation. And you know what that idea is? You can always hire another coach. You could just, there are other coaches to hire. They're out there. Just go to AFCA. They're all over the place, man. You know, hell, guess what? Maybe you hired the defensive line coach that everybody just thought was a joke and you win a national title. Or I don't know, maybe you hire the wide receivers coach who was selling real estate before he got back into coaching, who ends up winning a couple of national titles at Clemson. You can always hire another coach.
How bad do you want to win at Missouri State to decide that you're going to do this? And how bad do you want to coach to go take the job if you're already rich?
It's the darkest timeline, right? When you go, well, I guess this means I have to admit that Bobby Petrino really likes coaching. Because this can't be about the greed, y'all.
Where is Missouri State? Is it Springfield?
It's not. I think it's in the south. I think it's in like the southeast corner.
Okay.
I don't exactly know where, but I know somebody was like, oh, yeah, it's close to here. And I'm saying this from Nashville, Tennessee. So I'm guessing it's like southeast corner. Yeah. Anyway, you gotta just want to do the job at that point. Cause it's not about glamour or money.
So Jeff Long works at Kansas now, right? Let's say 2 years, what's Stan's last name? Stan. Pittman. Is that his name? The dude Arkansas just hired?
Sam Pittman.
There we go. Sam, my bad. Let's say this doesn't work after 2 years. Let's say Bobby goes 10-2 at Missouri State. I guess they said they said they had a law in place to stop that from happening, but I know enough about the South, baby. Ain't no law if you don't want it to be. Bobby come back. I mean, look what's happened since he left.
Oh, no, I mean, that's the thing, is that if things go according to plan, Bobby Petrino messes this whole golden arc up. That's it. And he gets caught for something else in Missouri.
But you might go to the Sugar Bowl before it. You do.
You might. I think, how's this? All can be forgiven.
Yes.
Because, you know, the Lord puts forgiveness in our hearts for a reason. We want to do it. We want to welcome people back. And you know what? Bobby might have done some bad things. Why don't you list those bad things? They're hilarious. It's a long list of really funny things, y'all.
But the thing is, his bad things are mostly just being sleazy, right? The bad thing with the motorcycle, it was certainly a violation of the law, but I don't think it like offended most people's sensibilities, right? Running the snake move on Tuberville, nobody really cared about that. The way he dipped out on the Falcons, wow, it really is a long list. All those, you can't really do this. But I tell you, we have not talked enough about what the lineage of Arkansas coaches has been, right? I can't remember who had the job before Houston Nutt. Whoever was between, Danny Ford, I think, had the job before Houston
Danny
Nutt.
Ford.
So we go from Danny Ford to Houston Nutt and all the things that come with Houston Nutt, including bizarre FOIA requests.
Mm-hmm.
Then we go from him to Bobby Petrino.
Mm-hmm.
Then we go from him for a year with John L. Smith. John L. Smith, the L is not a W.
Eight months.
Yes.
Eight months. An 8-month contract.
Who, by the way, was broke as the Ten Commandments and going in the media room, taking food and putting it in Tupperware boxes because he literally didn't have the money.
Oh, lost it all in a real estate scam in Kentucky. Yeah.
Happened to a lot of coaches, by the way. Mm-hmm. Y'all talk about the players, but okay. Anyway, so we go from him to Brett Bielema, the best/worst fit ever of a guy in school. It looked like a great fit. It was not.
Yeah, you know who Bielema's offensive line coach was? Sam Pittman.
Yep, that's right. Because they went from that to Chad Morris, which seemed like the best idea they'd had in quite a while. And now they got so far to the bottom of the barrel because they greatly misunderstood how attractive their job would be. Because you know what happens at places like Arkansas? Here's what happens, mm-hmm. right? And actually, Fayetteville, Arkansas, not a terrible place. But not necessarily the first place that you want to go. And so when those places come and somebody like me says that, they're like, things have gotten a lot better here, you know, since the last time you were there. Guess what? That's the same as everywhere else in America. Everybody else is getting better too. And they thought they could get somebody to finish at best fourth in the SEC West. And they
yeah, like, hey, man, look, look, we got a Starbucks now. Well, yeah, guess what?
Yo, I went to the town that I went to high school in, you know, where I went to school growing up. And, I mean, I'm there so rarely, so it's always seismic changes when I get back. Town called Waller, Texas. Population when I was there was like 1,493 people. School's got a lot more students now than it did when I was there. But it's still, I mean, it's a small town.
Yeah.
And I'll go back, and I didn't really think about it when I was there, but I'm like simultaneously struck by how little is there based on what my younger mind thought, but also how much more is there than the last time I was there. So you want to talk about the Alonzo morning, Jeff? That's me driving through that town and then seeing the Popeyes.
Well,
right? I'm like, huh, got a Popeyes. That's right. We're the April for the homecoming game every union. This is like, whoa, whoa, this is what's up.
It's just, yeah, like I'm in Nashville. I used, you know, I grew up around here, just in a town south of here, but spent plenty of time in Nashville. And, you know, didn't, it's not exactly my kind of place. But at the same time, you're going, well, you know, I can get a decent latte now here, can't I?
The Popeyes, as I recall, was not far away from the Sonic, and it always been a Sonic, but it was like the encapsulation of, wow, new stuff, the Popeyes. And then the sign on the Sonic said, Frito Pie is back. And I'm like, when did it ever leave? If I know anything about Texas, the Frito Pie ain't never left.
What dark, sad force removed the Frito Pie from our lives? And what saint brought it back?
Yo, I remember, because we moved there when I was seven. Like, right before I turned seven, we moved there. And I used to pack a lunch, but everybody ate lunch at school, and so I wanted to be like the other kids. And so I started voluntarily eating school lunch, which, in retrospect, not the greatest decision I ever made, but that's socialization, right? Like, that's the gag. On Friday, one day, early, they said we were having Frito Pie, like the announcements. You know, where they announced what lunch was, and they announced that it was Frito Pie, and the happiness that filled up the room, and I had no idea what a Frito Pie was. They were so ready for that Frito Pie. Like, y'all, I mean, if you ain't heard anybody talk about the Frito Pie, I don't know if this is like this in like city parts, because the more I think about it, nobody in Houston's really talking about the Frito Pie. But I'm telling you, at Waller, Holloman Elementary School, at the Frito Pie was the jam.
I will count it with this. You say no one in Houston's talking about Frito Pie, but if you eat a cream burger right next to the stadium of U of H, if you eat a cream burger, you can get a hamburger, you can get a shake, you can get an order of fries, and as a side, you can get Frito Pie.
Okay.
Not as the main. They'll give you a Frito Pie as a side.
That's the
That's
least...
why Texas is the great, it's why it's the greatest state in like the union.
Well, it's not, you know, we're not really a state.
It's true. That's why it's the greatest country in North America.
There you go.
It's Texas.
That's what we need. That's what we need, right? That's it. We're going to put Chad L. Butler on some coins. I think Bill Simmons once said it. Bill Simmons once said, he said the only reason that Canada is a different country from the United States and Texas isn't is because Canada prints its own money.
No, we need some Pimp C coin.
Yeah. We got to make this happen. We got to. Man, this has been fun. I'm trying to think if we missed anything. I'm still amazed, by the way, at how dumb Odell Beckham was. Odell wants somebody to look at him so bad. And can we talk about snitching Joe Burrow? He's like, well, I'm not a student athlete anymore, so I can say, yeah, the money is real. Well, some of them cats are still student athletes, Joey.
That was Joe's only fumble on the night, man.
Yeah, come on, man.
That was it. I do enjoy Joe finally just like dropping the cape and being like, yeah, I'm not a student athlete. I'm a football player, y'all. If you need me, I'm going to be in my limousine over here. Like, yeah. Immediately going Hollywood with it. Well, his friends have immediately dropped to outside. Like, there's a moment there where you go from, like, Joe just puts you outside the club, right? Like, the velvet rope came down at that moment, right? Like, well, yeah, I'm not a student athlete anymore. I'll see you guys. Deuces. This cigar's great.
I do like, though, that Joe won the Heisman and Joe put off poor white people. And I mean that sincerely. Because I do feel like, as weird as this may seem, in a lot of ways, that isn't really an overlooked group, and they very rarely look up to athletic competition and see themselves. Because most of the white dudes that, like, at least anecdotally, at least from what I could observe, you can tell me if I'm wrong, but it does seem like the white dudes who excel athletically in this country and the sports that we watch come from money, right? Like, access is what gets them in there.
Skill players in particular, I think you can probably, like, delve into your offensive line.
Yeah, I don't know that much about the Midwest.
Your goons, and you can get into, like, some guys who are probably from some less privileged backgrounds. But, you know, if quarterback is the new violin and it requires lessons, instruction, and investment, yeah, you're seeing more Andrew Lux, right? And way fewer Joe Burrows. Joe Burrow, by the way, like, in displaying real emotion and, like, what appeared to be sincere humility and awe of his situation, he might be the only people who realize exactly what kind of a season Joe Burrow was having.
Yes.
Like he might be the person most attuned to the magnitude and the uniqueness of this season, because I haven't seen a player sort of really be able to take that in and be awed by it, but also realize what he was doing was so singularly impressive and unique. I haven't seen many guys who can do that. And I think he was the only one who really sort of, you know, realizes what I think everyone else is going to realize a year or two now, which was, you know, this caught fire and there really won't be too many things like it.
Yeah, like he needs to hit with my favorite line from the Allen Iverson practice press conference. Actually, my second favorite line. My favorite line is, how the hell am I supposed to help my teammates get better by practicing? Which is far deeper than anybody realizes. Like, as my man Rod, Black Guy Who Tips, says, he was rejecting the notion of practice, not simply the idea of him going. He didn't understand what the, like, why are we even doing this? It made no sense to him. But the other line was, at some point, somebody, one of the reporters was laughing because obviously this whole thing had gone bizarre. And he goes, I know. It's funny to me too. And that's how I feel Joe Burrow feels about all of this. I know. This is crazy, man. This is nuts. Yeah. I have no idea. I didn't see this coming, but he put off on them folks that was hungry. And I'm like, yo, good looking out. And now I want to hear more of the stories of them offensive line types. You know what I mean? Cause like you watch the draft. The draft is poverty porn now every year. Every kid whose dad died or whatever it was, or whoever's mama was single or anything else, they're going to tell you that whole story. Now I want to hear about them small town Wisconsin goons. Tell me about the life. Tell me about the people from your town. Cause whenever I talk to white people from the little towns where stuff be happening there, all their stories are the best. I got a buddy with a story about a time one of them dudes tried to burn the whole town down. Oh no, he tried to burn a little bit of the town down and burn a little too much.
Oh, is that from Wisconsin? Is that from someplace?
No, that's Northern California, which is a world that people forget about. I don't mean the Bay. You know, I mean the North.
No, you get a lot of like places where it's super cold, and every now and then somebody's just like, you know what would make me warm? Burning down a couple of houses.
Yes.
I'm a little crazy. I've been inside too long. I think I'm going to burn down a couple of houses. Northern California, I just assume that person's crazy. If they do that in like Minnesota or Wisconsin, I'm like, well, maybe Olaf had a bad week.
Where do you go with like Appalachia?
Yeah, with Appalachia, it's usually this. It's usually somebody when you go, well, yeah, we're going to go to the grocery store. And they're like, well, why would you do that? I got a deer in the fridge, right? I got some pickles. This is what we're going to do, y'all. This is my brother ran a construction crew and on site in West Virginia for a while. And when it was Buck Week, he came to work and his crew was gone.
That's what I was about to say. He's like, we got pickles over here and the yapa on the wall. We could get some food.
Yeah, no, they were gone for a week. And when they came back, they didn't explain it. They didn't say, oh, we were deer hunting. They came back like, you know. And one guy didn't. And they didn't explain that either until 2 days later. My brother said, well, what are you doing? Where's this guy? Like, where's Carl? And they're like, oh, it's bear season. I'm like, well, where'd he go? And they're like, well, when we broke camp, he just walked deeper into the woods. We'll see him in a week or two.
Different world, man.
Carl just kept walking, man. gotta go get a bear.
Yeah. See, I don't have much Appalachia experience, but I imagine that Appalachia is much like I feel about like the Mississippi Delta. Everybody needs to go because I don't think you understand just how much America there is. And there's an America here that you need to check out because this is really how people out here living. I think Appalachia is like the other side of that coin.
Listen, if you're not in for the whole experience, why don't you just get yourself up to Gatlinburg? Why don't you just go to beautiful Pigeon Forge or Gatlinburg? Go do a tour at Dollywood. Remember Dollywood. The only theme park where you can bring your dog.
Did not know that.
Yeah. It's like that. If you just want a little taste of it without walking out in the woods with Carl and hunting a bear, go up there and see what vacation in the Appalachians looks like.
Did I tell you about the moment my daddy said he, like, you know, my dad's from a little town in Louisiana, so like, he's seen some things. But the moment he fully realized that the Delta was a different place, because he worked for a couple years at Mississippi Valley State running an institute, and he picked up some pork rinds off the shelf. And, you know, my dad turned 83 this week. So this is about 15 years ago, right? So, you know, late 60s, brings the pork rinds and he puts them down on the cabinet and the man look at him and say, they gonna be hard on your false teeth. My dad's teeth are not false. But that guy could not conceive of the idea that a man this age could have his own teeth. Because the Delta is a different place. Yeah, man. It could, and look, understand, my dad wasn't walking in there with like a mouth of them Jerry Jones teeth. You know what I'm saying? He got teeth of a man who was born in the 30s of Louisiana. So it's not like they're the greatest teeth in the world. This man could not believe that he had any teeth unless they were fake.
You know, if you've been there, you know. And if you don't, I suggest a vacation. Just a tour. Just a couple of days, man.
Just a good pass through. You know, you got to get off the interstate, right? You gotta mm-hmm. get off the interstate mm-hmm. to do that. But you gotta, J.A. told the story was, I don't know where exactly Alcorn is. I don't think it's in the Delta, but it might be. But I don't, you know, I don't know exactly. But J.A. told the story was about how they sent him down there to cover McNair when he was in school. He went to this restaurant and everybody, like this whole aesthetic was Confederate and that the waitresses had to wear gray dresses.
Oh, dear.
And I say had because I'm sure some of them were glad to, except that one black woman that J.A. saw working in that restaurant, he imagined was not so thrilled about that. He was like, anytime he have a bad day, he'd think about that black woman in that gray uniform serving up those Colonel Red burgers. Just be like, hey, man, it could be worse.
How do you ask somebody about that? How was your day at the Confederacy Shack? Bad, right?
All right. Welcome to Stonewalls.
Although I can't imagine like the irony of having a good day, right? If you're like, man, I had a good day at work at at the Confederacy Shack. How am I supposed to feel about that? No, it's not good.
And look, that was in 1995, right? So we're not even talking about like Lester Maddox at the Pickwick. This was in 1995.
Like they had it. They had internet.
Oh, well, somebody had internet. Something tells me they did not have it there. No. Like, where do you think? I'd love to know, like, who it was, the last person in America, non-Amish, to get, like, the internet in some form or fashion. The last person to hear about it. Like, oh, word? Huh.
Yeah. I'm just going to go ahead and bet it was somebody in Alaska. That's it, right? And I bet they were thrilled. Like, I bet they were like,
okay, 2004. It was 2004. I went to somebody's house. This is at Carolina, and they had wireless internet at the house. And I was like, "Whoa!" So you could get the internet like off your laptop, like all. Yeah, I had no idea wireless internet, but I have no idea when people actually got it because I felt like the last person in the world because everybody else knew, but I had no idea. So like, who was the last person to be like, "So I ain't got to plug the cord in?"
This is the other thing. I think it was Eminem. I'm going to tell you, the last person in the world to get the internet was Eminem. I don't think it was a poor person. I don't think it was somebody who was isolated. I think it was Eminem because there was a story in Eminem where he was showing off his vast selection of adult films to a writer. And I think this was like 2007. I don't think it was 2007, 2008. He was showing off his vast library of adult films to a writer. And the writer said, you know, you can just get all of this on the internet. And Eminem said, what? You didn't know. Being rich had basically turned him into like an isolated islander. Like just sitting in Detroit, Michigan in his mansion going, on the internet? Really? For free?
I wish we had started with this. Spencer Hall, check him out. FantasySociety.com, best college football writer in America. My man, thank you so much. I have enjoyed this greatly.
Always a pleasure. Yes. Likewise.
Ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us here on The Right Time. We do this thing a couple times a week. My man Gabe Bassane handles everything behind the scenes. Thank you, sir. Thank you to Spencer Hall. Also, thanks to our sponsors, My Computer Career and ZipRecruiter. Remember, subscribe to The Right Time. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. And we'll talk to you guys in a couple of days. Take it easy.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or subscribe on the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.
The Right Time with Bomani Jones is presented by Goodyear. Discover the possibilities. Goodyear, more driven.